Good morning, everybody. Okay, today I will try to finish this chapter, so I will go fast today. So yes, last week we have talked about the seven jhavanas. The first jhavana produce current life effective karma, which can only produce its effect in this very life. And the second to the sixth, we go to seven first. The seven jhavana generates subsequently effective karma, which can produce its result in the immediate future life. In my monastery in Myanmar, I have interviewed many yogis, practitioners, talking about their past life. Many of them have offered food or fruits to the monastics, and they pray to become monks and nuns in a future life. And because of this karma and aspiration, therefore, this life, that offering of fruits and food to the monastics produce its effect in the future life. Then they become monks and nuns. So this result is come from a seven, number seven jhavana. Okay, and in between second to sixth, generate indefinitely effective karma, which can produce its effect at any time along samsara, along the round of rebirth, until one reaches parinibbana. None can escape from this type of karma. Not even Buddha, not even Arahant can escape from this type of karma. So I would like to quote an example from Mahamoggallana, who is Arahant. Mahamoggallana was foremost in psychic power, everybody knows. He's one of the two chief disciples of the Buddha. The left hand disciple, which is foremost in wisdom, is Venerable Sariputta. And the left hand disciple, which is foremost in psychic power, is Venerable Mahamoggallana. So one day, Mahamoggallana was meditating in his cottage, or in his kuti. And there are 500 robbers approaching his kuti, wanting to kill him. And Mahamoggallana, using his psychic power, realized that 500 robbers are approaching him. And he used his psychic power, fly from the top of the roof of the house and escape. And after some time, while he was meditating again in his kuti, these 500 robbers approached him again. And using his psychic power, Moggallana escaped again. This time he escaped through the key of the hole, the door. And the third time, the 500 robbers want to approach him and want to kill him again. And Venerable Mahamoggallana realized, and he quickly, wanting to enter into fourth jhana and using his psychic power to escape. However, this time he failed. He was unable to enter into fourth jhana, therefore he cannot perform his psychic power. And the 500 robbers enter into his kuti and beat him down until his skull, break down as small as like grains. And this 500 robbers thought he was dead, and they returned. However, Venerable Mahamoggallana did not die, because as the chief disciple of the Buddha, before asking permission to enter into parinibbana, he cannot die. this is the law. So after the 500 robbers left, Venerable Mahamoggallana resumed his psychic power. His psychic power suddenly come back to him. And using his psychic power, he recollected all his bone and the body appear again. Then using his psychic power, he fly to where Buddha lived and ask Buddha's permission to enter into final cessation, Parinibbana. So from this story, you can see even the Arahant, who was psychic foremost in psychic power, still cannot escape the result of his past evil karma. Not to speak us, without any psychic power. So what Moggallana suffered from being beaten by the 500 robbers was due to the second to sixth javana. And you may ask why Venerable Moggallana has to suffer so badly. Because in one of his past life, he killed his parents almost to death. And after that life, he was cast down into hell, and when he reborn as human beings, his skull, his head was crashed down continuously, successively for 200 lifetimes. Even until his final life, his last life as a Moggallana who was foremost in psychic power, he still has to suffer from the bad consequences of his previous bad karma. So this is the second to sixth javana, which produce indefinite result. No one can escape from that. Even though, no matter what achievement he has, whether he's Buddha or he's Arahant or anyone. Therefore, Buddha always admonish us, strive hard, practice diligently to escape from the realm of rebirth, because the effect of karma is hard to bear, very hard, very difficult to bear when it ripens. Okay, then I would like to pose you a question. Why an action done once not only produce one effect, but produce uncountable effects? Just like Venerable Moggallana, he beat his parents up to death. Why he didn't suffer? Why he didn't reap the result only once? He has to suffer the result successfully for 200 lifetimes. And even he become the Arahant, he still has to suffer from the consequences of his bad karma. Why is it so? What do you think?
The severity of the bad karma?
This is one reason. Every karma, even light one, you also have to suffer, not only the heavy one. Why is it so? Okay, because of repetition of the javana. As I say, in a snap of finger, trillions of consciousness arise and pass away. You can imagine he beat his parent for, let's say, for just 5 minutes or 2 minutes. 1 second, trillions of consciousness arise and pass away. 1 second, trillions. If 2 minutes, how many trillions? And how many jhavana, how many jhavana consciousness has arisen and passed away? Uncountable. Therefore, the force, the tendency, the power remain intact along with our mental stream. Some are buried under the ground because the conditions are not ripe yet for that karma to function, to produce its result. But whenever the conditions are ripe, that karma, that jhavana, will produce its result. This is the reason why one karma perform, one karma perform once only in our lifetime can produce uncountable effect, whether in this life, in a future life, or along the round of rebirth. Is it clear? Okay. So, when we think of the terrible, when we think of how terrible the karma produces its effect, we just want to escape from doing any bad karma, right? So how can we do, what can we do to save us so not to perform any unwholesome karma that will ripen one day? It's through cultivating the right effort. There are four types of right effort. We have to cultivate it, we have to do more good action in order to avoid evil and cultivate good and purify the mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. So in order to achieve that goal, we must have four types of right effort. Number one, to prevent the arising of evil. Number two, to discard evil. Number four, to arouse and arisen wholesome states. Number three, to arouse and arisen wholesome states. And number four, to develop and bring to perfection the wholesome states. Let's see number one, to prevent the arising of evil. As an ordinary person who has not yet attained arahantship, we have many evil thoughts. We may not do verbally or physically any evil action, but we still have many unwholesome thoughts. For example, anger in the mental level, greed, jealousy. All these are called unwholesome or ugly mental states. So when all this unwholesome mental state arise in the mind, how can you help yourself? Before arising, before all this mental state, all this unwholesome mental state arise in the mind, we have to prevent them from arising first. How can you prevent all the unwholesome mental state of anger, jealousy, ill will, agitation, fear, and so on from arising? How? This is a very practical question, right? How to catch? Okay, there are two ways. Buddha always mentioned, if you read Sutta, Buddha always mentioned guarding the sense door. Guard your sense door. We must understand all the defilements, all the corruption of the mind come through 5, 6 sense bases. When a man's eye see a beautiful girl, immediately the lust arises. So where the lust comes from? Comes from eye contact with the pleasant object. And also when somebody abuses you, if agitation immediately immediately arises in the mind. So where the agitation comes from? Come from the unpleasant ear contact. And when a delicious food touch your tongue, immediately the craving arises, wanting to take it more. Eat more than necessary. So where the craving arises? Because of dependent on tongue contact. And also the body. Yeah? When the body touches something very smooth, then you feel so good. And because of the pleasant feeling, craving arises. So where the craving arises, where the craving comes from? It comes from pleasant body contact. Therefore, all the refinements come from six sense door of eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. When you think of something good, you feel good. When you think of something bad, you feel horrible, right? So in order to prevent the defilements enter through the six sense door, you've got to guard the six sense door. Guard your door. Guard your six sense door. How to guard it? Close the eyes. Put the cotton inside the ear. If close the eye, no defilement arise, then the blind person has no defilement at all, because the blind person cannot see anything, right? So this is not the way. This is not the way. Now, guarding the sense door means anchor your mind on a single meditation object. Let's say, breath. Whatever you do, you anchor your mind. Keep your attention on the breath at all times. And when you walk, let's say you walk in the street. In the street, there are so many beautiful women walking around. If you do not guard your sense door, your eye, the greedy eyes, wanting to see. And the moment there's pleasant eye contact, then the lust arises in your mind. And as you know, when the lust is unfulfilled, you feel suffering, right? So, in order to save ourselves, not to be carried away by all sorts of defilements, then we guard the mind, guard the doors through concentrating on the single object. Let's say your breath. So while you are walking around in the street, you only pay attention to your breath. Then even your eye sees, you cannot see clearly because your mind is with the breath. Even somebody abuse you, you cannot hear clearly what is the abusive word because your mind is with the breath. So even you are eating, because your mind is with the breath, you cannot feel the delicious taste of the food. Therefore, the lust, the craving will not arise. This is called guarding the sense doors. Therefore, to pursue happiness in your life, you have to learn meditation. There is no way that you can escape from suffering without guarding your mind. Buddha said, the guarded mind brings happiness. So meditation is the last and necessary path that you have to walk, finally. Okay, so now, although you try very hard to guard your sense door, keeping your mind on a single object, whether it's breath or loving kindness or sending love to everybody, and yet, sometimes, once a while, defilements still arise in your mind. Because we are ordinary person. Our mind, the nature of the mind is to delight in evil. This is what Buddha said. So, although we try very hard to guard the sense door, but sometimes the defilements still arise in the mind. So at that time, what should you do? You have to discard the evil, discard the unwholesome state which has which have arisen in your mind. Remove it, reject it, put all this unwholesome state into cessation. This need a lot of effort. A person who has no effort, entertain the refinements, follow the refinements. If they follow the refinements, refinements, we have three types of refinement. One as latent one, the latent refinement. If you can, the latent refinement come to the surface of the mind, become obsessive refinements. Then when the refinement becomes so strong that you have to act, you have to speak, you have to act. Therefore, the bodily action and verbal actions are performed. And once performed, as you know, they leave behind karmic energy in the jhavana state. There are many jhavana states, and each jhavana state will bear its own undesirable effect. We have just learned. So understanding how the mind works, how the consciousness works, and you know how to control your mind if you don't want to experience the unwholesome result in the round of rebirth. So to discard the evil, there are so many ways, but today I'm not going to deal this one. There are five ways in the Majjhima Nikaya Sutta 20, you can read on your own. The removal of the distracting thoughts. The Buddha suggested five ways to discard evil that has arisen in your mind. If you do not discard them, you are bound to perform karma, unwholesome karma. And once unwholesome karma is performed, it leaves behind a lot of unwholesome effect, waiting for a chance to ripen. Okay, number three, to arouse an arisen wholesome state. There are many wholesome states which has not yet arisen in our mind. Let's say concentration, let's say virtue, morality. Many people, they know Buddha's teaching, but they do not observe the five precepts. They do not observe non-killing. They do not abstain from non-killing. They do not abstain from killing, from stealing, from telling lies, from sexual misconduct, and from taking intoxicants. This is not a commandment of Buddha. Not Buddha, but if you observe them, you find happiness because you do not hurt anyone. And when you do not hurt anyone, you become fearless. Fearless is a great blessing. So not because Buddha asked us to do so. Not because Buddha said, hey, you cannot do this, you cannot do that. No, it's not a commandment from the Buddha. It's a basic human, basic humility. These five precepts. So if you a person has not abstained from these five things, he should arouse the effort for this unarisen wholesome states. And if they have already cultivated, they have already abstained these five unwholesome things, then he should arouse more, let's say concentration. If he has not yet started concentration practice, he should arouse that wholesome state by practicing concentration meditation. Even he has started concentration meditation, still not enough, because concentration is not the path to liberation. Vipassana is the path to liberation. So even he has started the concentration practice, he has to continue practicing vipassana, insight meditation. So whatever wholesome state you do not have, please exert your effort to arouse it. This is called right effort, to arouse an arisen wholesome state. Number four, even though you have keep five precepts, you have practiced concentration, you have practiced vipassana inside, but your practice is up and down. So you must also have effort to develop and bring to perfection the wholesome states. Let's say, once you have undertaken the five precepts, you must have the effort not to break them. But if you have broken the precept, what should you do? You also should not feel remorse. It's not necessary to feel remorse. You just restrain again, not to break the precept. That's all. Once you restrained, make the determination not to break it again, then your precepts and your morality is purified again. And once you have started the concentration practice, you have to bring it to perfection. The perfection of concentration is to achieve jhana, absorption. So you practice continuously until you achieve jhana. And lastly, once you have started the insight meditation, you have to continue until you see arising and passing away of all phenomena. If you can see arising and passing away of all phenomena, then the attainment of Nibbana is at hand. Because seeing arising and passing away is the gate to liberation. So these are the four types of effort that you have to cultivate in order to free yourself from all sufferings. Okay, how to generate habitual wholesomeness by wise attention? Let's say, we always react to a person, to a certain person, or to a certain object. So how can we generate a habitual wholesome one, the good reaction rather than the bad one? We contemplate impermanent. Let's say we have strong attachment to any person we like, our spouse, our son and daughter, parents and so on. So if we have strong attachment to this certain type of person, if we lose them, then we suffer deadly because of attachment, right? So in order not to suffer deadly owing to our own attachment, we have to contemplate impermanence all the time to that person. As we know, finally we have to depart. No one will live continuously. So if we get ourselves get ready, contemplate by contemplating impermanence of all phenomena, including the person or object, the object we attach to, the house, the car, and so on. So if we can bear in mind the universal truth of impermanency, then when things change, or when the person whom we love die, we can free ourselves from the sorrow, lamentation, and despair, because we already prepare our mind for it. This is how we can generate habitual wholesomeness by wise attention. Okay. In the first lecture, I have talked about two types of cognitive process. Number one is five-door cognitive process. The second one is mind-door cognitive process. And I have mentioned after five-door, many mind-door cognitive process will follow. But this not necessary so all the time. Sometimes the mind-door connective process can arise without depend on the five doors. For example, when you think of something, without using your eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, you think of something, then the mind door we call pure mind door. The pure mind door cognitive process will arise without dependent on mind door, five door. And when we contemplate something, when we contemplate, let's say, impermanence of all formations, then it is merely mind door cognitive process without depend on ear, nose, tongue, and so on. So some of the mind door are dependent on five door. Some are independent. Okay, let us see the mind-door cognitive process. We have two types of mind-door cognitive process. Number one is called sense sphere cognitive process. Sense sphere cognitive process occur in human world, in animal world, human world, in heaven also. And under sense sphere cognitive process, we have two. One is called consequent to a five-door process. Another one is called independent process, we have just mentioned. Independent process does not depend on five-door. And the second type of mind-door cognitive process is the process of absorption, jhana, for those who practice concentration. And under the process of absorption, we have jhana absorption and we have supramundane absorption. And the bare mind-door cognitive process, which does not depend on the five door, arises when we think, involve thinking, or when we reasoning something. Or when we contemplate something, we contemplate the law of karma, we contemplate the non-self nature of all phenomena and so on. And now we come to absorption cognitive process. There are three types of absorption cognitive process. One is called jhana absorption cognitive process. Number two is called path, stream enterer path. We have four paths, stream enterer, once returner, non-returner, and arahant path cognitive process. And after path cognitive process, followed by fruition cognitive process. Okay, let's see the process of absorption of jhana in the mind door. The first attainment of jhana. This cognitive process is different from the sense sphere cognitive process. Very different. Okay, let's say a person is meditating on breath, cultivating concentration. So mindfully he breathed in, breathed out, then gradually the light appear. The light appear under the nostril, then his mind enter into the light and unify the mind and the light unify together, and he attained first jhana. While attaining first jhana, this connective process will run through his mind, will run through his mental stream. What is there? Number one is called vibrating bhavanga. Number two, arresting bhavanga. Number three, mind door averting consciousness. The Pali word Patibhaga, because this changing computer, the Pali word does not appear here. Patibhagat Nimitta. Patibhagat Nimitta is the light appear under the nostril when you're practicing anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing. Using this nimitta, we can enter into jhana. So this person, this yogi, taking this light as object, and the mind absorb in this light, and attain first jhana. So, number one, vibrating bhavanga. Number two, arresting bhavanga. Followed by mind door averting consciousness. The mind door avert to patibhagat nimitta. And PR is called preparation. Prepare the mind for the attainment of jhana. And followed by access. And followed by conformity. And followed by change of lineage. Change of lineage before he attained jhana and after attained jhana. The lineage is different already. So therefore it's called a change of lineage. And the last one is called jhana. So for the first attainment of jhana, the consciousness, the only one mind moment of jhana. Because mind is so fast. And because of lacking of mastery of jhana. So first time, only one mind moment. So this person may not even know he has attained jhana. Then after that, he emerged from the jhana, then the mind fall into life continuum, bhavanga. So from here you can see, jhana mind moment only last for one moment. But after repetition, after this person has mastered the jhana, he enters the jhana again and again, again and again, then the thought process becomes different. So here, same, the mind door averting consciousness avert to the nimitta here, followed by as prepare the mind for the attainment of jhana, then access to the jhana, then conformity with the jhana, then change of lineage. Then followed by J H jhana mind moment. You see, all continuously with jhana mind moment. How many jhana mind moment depend on how long he absorb in the jhana. If he absorb in the jhana for 1 hour, then only jhana consciousness arise, pass away for 1 hour. If he enter into jhana for 20 minutes, only jhana consciousness arise and pass away for 20 minutes. And when he emerge from the jhana, the mind fall into bhavanga. Okay, is it clear? Today I teach a bit fast. I want to finish this chapter. If I teach slow, you have no question to ask. So if I teach fast, you have a lot of questions to ask. Now we come to the last one, the process of supramundane jhavana in the mind door. First attainment of path and fruition, mainstream enterer. He has become a noble person, stream enterer. What is the object when a person become enter into nibbana? Before enter into nibbana, what object he comprehend? Impermanent, suffering, or non-self, either one. But if a person enter into jhana, what object he takes? Please answer me. If a person enter into jhana, what object he takes? Patibhagat Nimitta, the light here. But now, if a person is going to become a noble one, become a stream enterer, what object he takes before he sees Nibbana? There is either impermanent suffering or non-self nature of all formations, either one, not three together. some while contemplating impermanence, then suddenly the path arises and he becomes stream enterer. Some person while contemplating suffering, dukkha, then the path arises, then he becomes stream enterer. Somebody while contemplating non-self, then the path arises and he becomes stream enterer. So either one. So this person while practicing vipassana, contemplating five aggregates as impermanence, suffering, non-self again, again, and again, and before he achieved nibbana, then this thought process arises in his mind, in his mental stream. Number one, it's called vibrating bhavanga. Number two, arresting bhavanga. Number three, mind-dual-averting consciousness. The mind avert to the either impermanent, suffering, or non-self nature of formation. And followed by preparation, PR, prepare the mind for the attainment of nibbana. Then assess, CN is conformity. And all this mind moment, why mind moment, all this mind moment takes impermanent, either impermanent suffering or non-self nature of formations. And after that, the next moment is called change of lineage. Before he attained nibbana, he is a worldly, ordinary person. Now, he's going to see nibbana, so he cut off the lineage of ordinary person and become a noble one. Therefore, it's called change of lineage. And change of lineage take nibbana as object. And after that, followed by path consciousness, stream entry path consciousness, only arises once along the round of rebirth, never arise for second time. Why? Because once path consciousness arises, this person has become a noble one called stream enterer. Once you have become stream enterer, you don't have to become second time stream enterer again, right? Therefore, it arises only once in the round of rebirth. You don't have to become a stream enterer for second time. Okay? Then after path consciousness, two fruition consciousness. Path is called Tao, in Chinese it's called Tao. Fruition called Guo, Tao Guo. Two moments of fruition consciousness also takes Nibbana as object. And after that, this first attainment of path and fruition, cognitive process come to cessation and the mind fall into bhavanga. This person now has become Arya, noble person. Okay. Let us see what is the function of path consciousness and the fruition consciousness. What is the difference between path consciousness and fruition consciousness? Okay. The path consciousness penetrates into the four noble truths. The four noble truths is the essence of Buddha's teaching. But before we become a noble one, our understanding of four noble truths is not complete. Only after become a noble one, our understanding of four noble truths become complete. Not for the stream enterer, not complete 100%, maybe 25%. When you become Arahan, your understanding of four noble truths become complete. Okay, so the path consciousness has four functions. Number one, it understands, the path consciousness understand the truth of suffering. What is the truth of suffering? five aggregates of clinging is the truth of suffering. Okay. And the path consciousness abandon the origin of the truth of suffering. What is the origin of the truth of suffering? Craving. Craving. Craving for life, craving for sensual pleasures. Okay. And the third function of path consciousness is realizing the cessation of suffering. Another word, attaining Nibbana. Then what's Nibbana? The destruction of that same craving. Craving is the origin of the suffering, and the cessation of suffering means the ending of that same craving. And the last one, the path, the function of the path consciousness to develop the noble eightfold path. Therefore, path consciousness has four functions: understanding, abandoning, realizing, and developing. And when a person attain the path consciousness, the path consciousness eradicate three types of factors. Number one, identity view or personality view. He does not identify body and mind as myself anymore. He does not identify feeling as myself, formation as myself, perception as myself, consciousness as myself, and the body as myself. Because this identity view has permanently uprooted. And the second factor he uproot is clinging to rice and riches in the belief that they can lead to Nibbana. By walking Noble Eightfold Path, he realizes Nibbana. Therefore, he only believes in Noble Eightfold Path, not other rice and riches. Last one, doubt about the Triple Gem. His faith to Triple Gems become unshakable. There's no doubt in him regarding the Triple Gems, Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. Okay, so this is the end. Of course, I have more details, but I don't want to elaborate more. So this is the end of this cognitive process. So as a summary, we have different types of cognitive process. Sense sphere cognitive process, like five door followed by mind door with seven jhavana. And we also have absorption cognitive process, whether it's jhana, absorption, cognitive process, or path and fruition cognitive process. And for jhana, for sense sphere cognitive process, usually we have seven jhavana. But for jhana cognitive process, we have uncountable. But for the path and fruition, path only one jhavana. And still we have fruition cognitive process. Let me follow one point which I missed. So what's the difference between path and fruition consciousness? As we have discussed, path has four functions, and also path consciousness has the power to uproot three fetters. But resultant consciousness, fruition, path consciousness is called wholesome consciousness. Fruition consciousness is resultant consciousness. This means that the wholesome consciousness immediately bear its wholesome fruit, bear its wholesome resultant, which is fruition consciousness. And fruition consciousness, what is his function? His function is to experience the liberation after eradication of defilements. After the three factors has been uprooted, then the fruition consciousness feel the burden, the feel the liberation when this defilement are gone away. when this defilement have gone away, he feel a certain degree of liberation. That is the function of fruition consciousness. Okay, we should end here. Thank you.